Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
Two high-priced newcomers. They spent money to keep Pierre Paul as a free agent. Dalton in trouble and going down again. It's Vernon, the $85 million man.
It is caught by the rookie Sterling Shepard for the touchdown.
He's pressured again. He steps, he fires.
8-2 second. It is Landon Collins for the fourth straight game.
NYG Weekly, we're back. Ethan and Wise here with you again. A new season where football is almost here. Training camp starts today. Before we get into everything training camp related, we got to take care of the housekeeping. New year, same intro. First things first, go follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Go follow Wise at NYG Daily. Go follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, guys. Wise and I were just talking before the show. We love you guys. You guys have shown us so much love over the last year. Just looking at how big this channel has grown from our first episode until now, it's amazing. We're so excited to interact with you guys even more this season. That can only happen if you subscribe. Give us the downloads. Give us the listens. Write us nice things in the iTunes comment section. Speaking of which, we're not only on iTunes, we're on Google Play, and we're now on Stitcher. So if you're on an Android and you don't have iTunes, and you don't want to download us from the Google Play Store, add us on the Stitcher app. Every listen helps. Next note of housekeeping. A lot of you guys have been asking, and I did mention it last year, and I'm a man of my word. We are doing the NYG Weekly Fantasy League for this upcoming season. So here's how to enter, because I imagine a lot of you want to join. Take the link to this episode. You're going to share it on your Twitter. When you share it, you're going to use the hashtag PlayNYGWeekly. That's hashtag PlayNYGWeekly. And depending on how many people we get, we'll adjust the size of the league. I'm going to have to probably pick some people, but let's just see how that goes first. So share the episode, hashtag PlayNYGWeekly. Go do it if you want to play fantasy football with me and Weiss this year. There will be a nice prize at the end. Speaking of prizes, last note of housekeeping, more giveaways. We're going to be doing a bunch of tailgate preseason giveaways, so stay tuned for that. The items are going to be great. We're getting that organized together. So like I said, if you follow me on Twitter, you follow Weiss on Twitter, you listen to the podcast, you'll be all set. And you'll be, you know, you'll know when we do that stuff. Weiss, it's been since May, I think, was our last podcast.
Yes, sir.
How we living?
How are you?
I'm great.
How's everything?
Everything's great with me. I feel like I gotta let you get a few words in now, because I just went on that like 3 minute intro.
No. That's great. Everything has been great, man. Everyone's getting ready for football. Training camp starts tomorrow. Everyone's kind of getting in their final predictions and their previews, and of course their open letters to certain players.
Oh God, that wasn't even on our topic list, but I think we might have to talk about that.
It just came to my mind.
That was, yeah.
So yeah, man, everyone's ready to go, from media to blogs to, and of course, players, and it's that time of the year.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like we've got the usual training camp storylines that come out there. I'm not going to get into too many of the cliches, but I think the Giants are already doing one of them, which is there's always those articles about new technology. I don't know if you saw the Giants doing that virtual reality stuff.
I did.
Yeah, so that's definitely interesting. Yeah, I'm excited. It's about time. I've been doing my fantasy football mock drafts. I've been reading the blogs, reading the articles, excited for Giants camp to start tomorrow. Before we get into all the training camp notes, let's just get it out of the way since you brought it up. Gary Myers, New York Daily News, wrote quite possibly, I read this article, I don't even want to call it an article, this nonsense open letter. As soon as he broke out the Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry comparisons, my eyes rolled so far into the back of my head I couldn't even finish. Comparing Odell Beckham Jr. to two guys who did mounds of cocaine in the prime of their athletic careers and probably well after that, nonsense. Especially for a guy who hasn't failed a drug test and literally just got back from a trip from Texas where he was visiting a kid with cancer. I mean, it gets to the point where you laugh. And I think for the two of us, we were talking about the rundown for this episode, and this open letter didn't even cross our minds because I feel like we've gotten to the point where we've pretty much heard every ridiculous Odell Beckham take in the book that even Gary Myers' article doesn't faze us a couple days later.
No. I mean, at this point, we're used to it. It's kind of here's the thing. When it comes to these type of articles that I read about, you know, Odell, and there's many other people that get this type of scrutiny in the league, maybe not as much as Odell, but it just shows me that newspapers in general, when they need, you know, when they need to get their papers, and I didn't even know about this till this morning, that this was that article was actually on the back page of the New York Daily News yesterday. Whenever they need, you know, their sales to go up or they need clicks, you know, you insert an athlete like that and you write garbage like that, and it creates controversy. It creates a conversation, and it gives you, you know, warranted or unwarranted attention. You know, Gary Meyer, that was a garbage article. I didn't understand what he was trying to say. And I had a lot of people tell me, well, you know, he's not comparing it. Well, it's not that he's comparing the athletes, the two individuals or the three individuals right now. What he's saying is, hey, Odell, because this is what, in many people's eyes, this is what Odell's done wrong this offseason. He didn't come to OTAs. So what Gary Myers is essentially saying, I took away as a reader from this article, was that, hey, Odell, if you don't stop not coming to voluntary workouts and you continue to work out with people like Johnny Manziel, or you continue to get overly emotional after losses, then we're going to kind of put you in that same category as Strawberry and Gooden and Lawrence Taylor. That's just garbage, man. I mean, I don't even know why I'm sorry I brought it up. I didn't even want to bring it up. That's basically what it is. That basically sums up what that article, why it was written, and why it's complete and utter garbage, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, I mean, we agree. It's just garbage. And the comparison makes no sense. I mean, he's talking about superstars that have that sort of, you know, they had the talent, but they couldn't get their head straight, so they flamed out real quick. And we're talking about a guy who, I mean, the baseline, if he has below 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns, it's considered a failed season. I mean, that's how high of a ceiling we're talking about right now. So, you know what? Don't worry about his production. He didn't go to OTAs. He was training with his personal guy out in California, was getting advice from Hall of Fame wide receivers. He'll be at camp. He's not holding out for a contract. He just visited some sick kid down in Texas. I mean, give the guy a break. It's ridiculous. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's move on. Let's move on. Training camp.
Yes.
Today. When the episode comes out, it'll be today. Hopefully the episode's up in time. Depends on our producer's schedule. I'm excited because we'll finally have some meaningful, some less meaningful Giants storylines. Let's get into it. You wanted to talk camp battles. I'll let you start. Pick a position, and let's go over some battles and what we're looking to see.
You know, this is the first time where, actually, I'm not going to say the first. This has been the first time in a long time. I would have to go back to maybe 2012, 11, 10, where the Giants are coming into camp and so many starting spots are locked up.
It's quite amazing, honestly.
Yeah, it's really, like, last year we came in, like, or even I will use 2015 as a great example. We came into 2015 and there was a lot of undrafted free agent guys that were being talked about as potential starters week one.
Mm-hmm.
And last year it was the whole talk about the whole free agency and how everyone would fit in. But this year, so much has been established, and especially on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball, that we're over here talking about, you know, the biggest camp battle, in my opinion, is going to be, or the one that I'm the most intrigued about or most excited to see, is Darian Thompson versus Andrew Adams. I know the Giants are very high on Darian Thompson, and I'm high on him as well. But, you know, Andrew Adams was really impressive last season. If he continues to make those strides and continues to show that he deserves snaps, it makes an interesting competition. We're going to see how the Giants play with those three safeties. Obviously, Landon Collins is a penciled-in starter. But who plays opposite of him? I think that's an intriguing battle, one that I'm excited to see. Other than that, I mean, I'm excited to see B.J. Goodson. I'm excited to see if he can secure that middle linebacker spot, not just for this year, but, you know, going forward. Some back end spots, you know, defensive end. Can Avery Moss kind of become that pass rusher early on that we fully expect him to become? Devin Taylor, who they picked up from the Lions, mm-hmm. how's that going to work out? And then inside, you got Damon Harrison, all pro, Snacks, who had a great interview on Hot 97. If you guys have not seen that interview,
guys, go check it out.
He talks about his whole journey. It's absolutely amazing. I would definitely recommend everyone to see it. You got him penciled in as a starter. Next to him, you got the hope is Dalvin Tomlinson is that day one starter. But if not Tomlinson, can Robert Moss, who we had on a couple episodes ago, can he step in? Is this the year Jay Bromley comes out and becomes, you know, and kind of earns himself some playing time? So there's a lot of good competition right now on the defense side of the ball. Offensively, though, what do you think about what battles are you looking forward to the most?
So on the offensive side of the ball, certainly a position of interest for me is going to be tight end, because and for a few reasons I'll go over them. One, Evan Engram, first round pick. Unless you're a quarterback, and this goes all the way back to when Eli was drafted, you're a first round pick, you're starting, you're making an impact right away. And if you look at the offense last year and how much it stuttered because they lacked a threat in the middle of the field, they drafted Evan Engram in the first round, and he is the solution to the problem. Now, I want to pump the brakes on Engram a little bit, because as high as I am on Engram and as excited as I am to watch him, I mean, guys, if you think about it, you have Evan Engram, who is 6'3", and ran the same 40 time as Odell. That's terrifying. It's terrifying. So you have him, and then you bring in Rhett Ellison, who's supposed to be this stud blocker from the Vikings. You know, those two definitely have a spot. Now it comes down to, okay, you have Jarrell Adams, who, not exactly the most polished pass catcher, but he did have some nice blocks last year. Will Tye seems to be on the bubble now because, you know, he was someone who got a starting spot at first, one, because of injury, and two, Larry Donnell was just so terrible last year that we really got to see what Will Tye was made of, and the answer was not a lot. Matt Lacoste, third year, misses first two with injury. We get to see what he looks like in camp, if he can stay healthy. That was me knocking on wood. So you have Evan Engram and Rhett Ellison locked into those two positions. Very curious to see who secures that spot as the third tight end, probably the fourth. Jarrell Adams, to me, I think he'll definitely be the third. After that, it really depends on Matt Lacoste's health, because all we've heard the last few years is this guy's got great potential, he's very athletic, can't stay healthy. So let's see if Lacoste can make it out of camp. Definitely a guy I'm excited about.
Yeah, I think with the tight end position, I think it's or a lot of these back end spots on the roster, you know, those third or fourth string tight ends or receivers or running back, a lot of that's going to come down to their ability to play special teams. It could be the difference of whether the Giants keep, you know, an extra running back or an extra receiver or an extra tight end is their ability to play special teams. So it's definitely interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Definitely. And sticking with the offensive side of the ball, not necessarily, I would say, a roster battle as much as it is configuration. I'm very curious to see how the offensive line pans out. You know, we definitely have Eric Flowers, Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg, but in terms of the right side of the line, where John Jerry and DJ Fluker battle it out is definitely going to be interesting to me. People have been raving about Fluker's size pretty much all offseason. He's younger, and you really never know, you know, if this could be just a player needing a fresh start, or if we're just going to keep seeing the same weaknesses we saw over when he was on the Chargers. So, you know, the battle for right guard with Jerry and Fluker, definitely going to be interesting. Don't forget Bobby Hart as well, because Fluker does have the ability to play right guard and right tackle. So just seeing how the right side of that line pans out.
Yeah, sometimes it is just the player just needs a fresh start. You look at last year, remember the trade the Eagles made with Dorial Green-Beckham for Dennis Kelly with the Titans. You know, Green-Beckham doesn't pan out with Philly, but Dennis Kelly, who was regarded as sort of like a failure in Philadelphia, ends up getting a multi-year extension today.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, players just need that fresh start, and, you know, hopefully that's Fluker's, you know, place here. He's been working really hard in the offseason. I've been seeing a lot of posts on him on social media. But Ereck Flowers, I'm make a comment about him. You know, all this talk about open letters to players, I'm surprised nobody in the media read an open letter to him.
Yeah.
This is a big year for him.
Especially for someone who's such a snowflake, in my opinion. I mean, this guy blocks everyone on Twitter.
Listen, if he has an average year, the Giants are going to have to pick up his option. If they don't and he hits the free agent market, did you see what one of the Khalil brothers got? Did you see what Russell Okung got?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get paid.
Yeah, exactly. And even if he has one average year after two, you know, bad years, one average year could make him some money. So this is a really big year for him as well. And, you know, I'm interested to see what he's like. I know he's had sort of like a body transformation.
That's what everyone's saying. I hate these sort of off-season narratives sometimes, because at some point you're like, oh, he's looking quicker and slimmer. All right, show me that you can block a below-average defensive end, please. You know, that's all that really matters to me. And while we're on the subject of Flowers and the offensive line, guess who John Jerry's been training with this offseason? LeCharles Bentley.
Oh.
And guess who Fluker's been training with?
Duke Mayweather.
So these two guys have been training with some of the best offensive line coaches out there. Ereck Flowers, while I believe this year didn't decide to train with his father and train actually at the facility, that's a baby step, I guess. But you could always be doing more. I remember last offseason, I think it was Weston Richburg, was very upset with the offensive line, and I think Flowers specifically, regarding the lack of sort of the go-get-em attitude where you go out and get a really good coach. But like I said, very interested to see how the right side of the offensive line pans out.
When it comes to Flowers, it's all blind hope right now.
Yeah.
Let's call it how we see it. It's blind hope. You know, the whole transformation, I know he's done. I even heard he was doing some kickboxing with Justin Pugh this offseason. Look, okay. that's all great and all, but that's not enough for us to be like, you know, have confidence. It's all blind hope. That's what it is. I've been more of a, I guess, Ereck Flowers apologist than you.
Yeah.
I'm here to say it's all blind hope at this point. You know,
And this is where I think we both can sort of pat ourselves on the back. We have our takes, and if we're wrong, we'll admit it. And I know we got a question when we get to the question portion of the show towards the end, where I will be doing maybe not necessarily some apologizing, but some admission of guilt or wrongdoing. And you guys will see what I mean. But
can't wait for that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, hey, listen, new season, new me.
I like that.
Let's move on. I guess more camp battles. You touched on the safety position. Definitely interesting to see. Obviously, Landon has his spot locked up. Andrew Adams was phenomenal last year. He was one of the best safeties in the league. Rookie safeties, at the free safety position. And listen, we had a lot of hope for Darian Thompson. Came out of Boise State. He looked good in camp. Got hurt, unfortunately. Had to get season-ending surgery. Listen, the fact that we're even talking about whether or not a former draft pick that we were and still probably are excited about, that we're like, oh, we might have too much talent. It's a good problem to have. And it definitely allows them to get a little more creative with the defense.
100%. I mean, you think about where this team was in going into 2015 versus where they are now. It's especially in that secondary.
Night and day.
It's ridiculous how big of a difference it's been.
Let's do one more camp battle, and I think I already know what your answer is going to be. The backup quarterback position,
mm-hmm.
Geno.
I am 100% team Geno.
Okay, me too.
I believe in Geno Smith's talents. I'm rooting for him. Again, I'm going to go back to the Hot 97 interview with Snacks. Snacks speaks very highly of him. Even Brandon Marshall speaks highly of him. I'm a firm believer that Geno, I'm not saying Geno's the successor Eli, but I think Geno can really kind of find his footing here and possibly kind of compete, you know, not just for the backup spot, but going into the future. You know, he has to still prove a lot, but I believe in Geno. I think he deserves the opportunity to compete. I believe he should have his fair shot in this.
Yeah, absolutely. And for us, it's sort of like a weird thing to even talk about because Eli has been that Iron Man for so long. And, you know, there I go, knocking on wood again, never gets injured. But I don't think it's really an argument that Geno is better than Josh Johnson and that Davis Webb is going to need to sit at least a year before he can start taking some good reps as the competing for the backup spot.
Right. Yeah, I think it'll be tough for Davis Webb to kind of win that QB2 job this year. I think the Giants are going to carry three quarterbacks. And I think, you know, Davis Webb's going to be sort of, you know, inactive for the majority of the season.
He's going to be a student, is what I like to say. Yeah. Let's go into what is the next section we want to talk about? What
can we touch on training camp one more thing?
Yeah.
Can you give me some players that you're excited to see? A couple of guys that are under the radar that are not being talked about enough.
All right. Let's talk. Before this, let me go into, I'm trying to pick like a position to start at. It's so hard because I feel like this roster is so talented and just so deep that even the guys who I picture as being under the radar are just like don't really have that big of a shot. I'm going to say Avery Moss as one player on the defensive side of the ball because last season you and I both spoke about it. I wrote about it, how overworked JPP and Olivier Vernon were. They had the highest percentage of 4-3 defensive end snaps, 1 and 2 in the NFL. JPP suffered that injury because, in my opinion, he was overworked. Olivier Vernon was playing on an injured wrist for part of the season. So behind them, obviously you have Romeo Okwara, played very well, like what you see out of him. Owo Digizua, we don't even know what his football future is going to be. Obviously he dealt with some personal issues at the end of last season and going into this offseason. Then you got Kerry Wynn, but Avery Moss, 5th-round pick, he's got incredibly long arms, and you know, he could definitely add some moves to his repertoire. I think like the only thing that I really saw in the highlights was he's got a nice spin. But outside of that, it's just excited to see what he can bring because I feel like the two positions that don't have incredible depth are defensive end and cornerback. I think we're going to touch on cornerback a little bit. But Avery Moss is my guy to watch on the defensive side of the ball. You had one you wanted to jump in.
Yes. You know, one of my little bit of concerns this season is a cornerback spot.
Yeah.
Top three spots are locked up. However way you want to put it, it's locked up. But after that, it's a lot of uncertainty. And I thought the Giants would bring in kind of like a veteran, like they brought in Leon Hall last year. They didn't. But one of the guys I'm going to be watching this summer who had a really good spring is Michael Hunter, cornerback. He was on the practice squad last year. I think he came on to the active roster at some point too. But he had a good spring, and I'm anxious to see him this summer in the preseason as well. Another guy you kind of touched on earlier on the offensive side of the ball is Matt Lacoste. This is a guy that everyone was raving about, you know, before the injuries. Now that we got Evan Engram in there, it's not that much rave about him just because everyone's raving about Evan Engram. But I'm anxious to see what he can bring to the table as well. And then third for me is Orleans Darkwa.
Okay.
I think, you know, we've kind of been waiting and waiting and waiting and kind of hoping to see when will Darkwa kind of get, I'm not going to say he's never had a fair shot, but when is he going to get that opportunity to really earn real game snaps? And I think this year with, you know, obviously Jennings gone, you got Paul Perkins there, you got Wayne Gallman there. You know, if Wayne Gallman is not necessarily ready, who I like Wayne Gallman a lot. We spoke about that in the post draft podcast, but I'm anxious to see what Orleans Darkwa can bring to the table, and can he sort of earn his way up that depth chart for the Giants?
Yep. I'll give one or two more. Darius Powell, just because of his size. 6'3", 230 pounds, only a little bit shorter than Brandon Marshall, same size. You can never have too many of those big targets, especially with Eli, because he's always seemed to favor those big receivers. You mentioned Lacoste. Nat Berkey, I feel like a guy not that many people are talking about this offseason, just because, we spoke about it before, the safety position, he sort of got three locks, and then after that, Nat Berkey, who has had his fair share of concussion issues, he's going to be competing with some guys, Duke Iheanacho, hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly, Jadar Johnson. So there's going to be some battles for that fourth safety spot, and, if Berkey can't stay healthy, he's got that reckless style of play, he hits real hard, and it's hard for him to stay on the field, man. He might be on the bubble.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously, I think, Davis Webb in the preseason.
Sure, yeah.
He's going to be getting some playing time. Let's see what he can do, Let's see what he's got.
He's got the big arm. Let's see if he's got the accuracy and the ability to read a defense.
I like how he was working with Evan Engram a lot. I like their relationship that those two have built.
Yeah.
This offseason.
You got to foster it. And I think I mentioned earlier, and I don't know if I even finished my thought on it, when I said pump the brakes on Engram a little bit, only because the tight end position is one of the hardest to learn going into the NFL. You got to learn the blocking scheme and the route tree. So you look around the league and you see a lot of guys that come in, they're really hyped. And they go out right away and it takes them a few years to catch on to the offense. Depending on how they use him, he could be successful. I just don't want people to be disappointed if he's not some offensive stud. And because I've come around on this, I really do think Sterling Shepard's going to have a tremendous season.
Yeah, he's also another guy that had a good spring. He's not under the radar, but he's a guy that, maybe was kind of hidden in all this Brandon Marshall and Evan Engram talk. But he's also still there. He also can be, make that big step from year one to year two.
Right.
Hey, maybe it's like the big step that Landon Collins took, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sterling Shepard's a really talented receiver.
Very talented. And people like to put him in a box because he plays that slot receiver role. I'm pretty sure he had the highest wide receiver vertical in his draft.
Yeah, and
it was like 41.
Last year's rookie season, he was tied with Michael Thomas of the Saints in touchdowns. He had 8.
Yeah, he had like 800 yards, 8 touchdowns, and just went right under the radar.
And the offense was really bad.
It was terrible. Yeah.
So when you get a production out of that out of a rookie second rounder, that's pretty exciting.
That's pretty great. All right, next up on the rundown, you wrote, can the defense take the next step? And my first question to you is, what do you mean by that? Because they were amazing last year, and I'm curious what next step you expect them to take.
Is there a next step for this defense?
Is there a next step?
Yeah. Last year was their first year together, and it took – remember that first couple weeks, it was tough.
Right.
Especially the defensive line. They weren't really getting, to the quarterback. That Minnesota game – I actually rewatched that Minnesota game on Game Pass a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And you watched it. It was a lot of, questions going around that defense. A lot of people kind of seem confused. And Spags' defense is kind of, known to be tough to get a hold of.
Right.
Because there's just so much moving parts. But now, going into year three, that next step as it pertains to the chemistry, how close can this unit get? And Damon Harris, I'm going to go back to the Hot 97. He made such a great comment. He was talking about how they have Dallas's number last season. And he said, when it comes to our defense, we kind of have that we don't take shit from anybody mentality.
Yeah.
And when you come and you play us and you see Landon Collins and you see JPP and you see Olivier Vernon, you see these guys and you see Jonathan Casillas, these are guys that don't take shit from anyone. And that intimidating factor helps them sort of overpower you, per se. But going into the season, I want to see, is there that next step? And if it is, how dominant can this defense be? Because we're bringing back, what is it? 8, 9 of 11 starters. The only new starter is probably going to be a middle linebacker
and defensive tackle. Yeah.
Other than that, unless Darian Thompson wins his job back, we're talking only two new starters on defense. And, I want to see if there's that next step for this defense. I think there is. I think we're going to see it this year, specifically at a certain players.
To me, just don't take a step back. If they can stay at the level they were at, the offense is going to bounce back. I am certain of it. And that's actually the next thing we're going to talk about in the rundown. But just don't take a step back. It's that simple. You were dominant last year. Be dominant again this year. I think like their secondary was ranked number one by Pro Football Focus. Their defensive line was unbelievable. They just needed a little bit more depth. Got it in the draft. Just don't take a step back. I think it's that simple.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not expecting a step back. I'm more anxious to see, are there any adjustments?
Right.
You know, because as good as they weren't perfect. You know, if there's one thing that they can work on, it's, you know, getting to the quarterback without having to blitz.
Yeah, know? Exactly.
We get that. Another thing they can work on is, okay, who's that third defensive end? Who can come in on third down and kind of take that OC role that everyone's kind of been looking for? Is it Avery Moss? Is it Devin Taylor? Is it, you know, is Oa, you know, somehow going to figure it out? So these are things. Romeo Okwara, we haven't even mentioned him. Can he take that next step? How good can he be? So these are all these things that we're very excited to see this summer and going into the season.
Definitely. Let's talk offense. I feel like there's way more to talk about on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball. Where do you want to start? We could start with the additions to the offense.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited. I think it's very rare that you go from offseason to training camp and feel comfortable that the GM and the coach addressed the biggest areas of concern. And I know a lot of people are probably thinking, but Ethan, they didn't really upgrade the offensive line. We'll get into that. The tight end position.
Yes.
They fixed the tight end position. That was the number one issue. I don't care what anyone says. The lack of a tight end that could block, the lack of a tight end that could split a defense down the middle, that is what was hindering the Giants' offense last season. Will Tye's Pro Football Focus ratings, atrocious. One of the worst blockers at the tight end position, basically a dump truck when he caught the ball. Not elusive in the slightest. I believe, if I'm misquoting, please, I'm sorry. I think it was Dan Schneier, our good friend and recurring guest, he'll be on again, tweeted out a stat that opposing defenses used two safeties against the Giants like 56% of the time, which was the highest in the NFL. Some stat like that. Because they know the ball goes to Odell. He's the only threat in the offense. If you can contain Odell, you can contain the offense for most of the game, because you can't contain Odell for an entire game, as we saw. But you get Rhett Ellison, who can block, and he can help on either side of the line, whoever's struggling, whoever needs the help. You get Evan Engram, who can split a defense right down the middle and prevent defenses from focusing in on Odell, focusing in on Shepard. Then you get Marshall on the outside. I mean, if this offense isn't top 10, something is wrong. Something is wrong.
Yeah. You talk about the tight end position. You know, I think one of the other weaknesses for this team was they never really had a true other outside receiver. I thought Victor Cruz was just simply not.
He was too short, and with his age and injury, could not get separation on the outside.
I mean, Victor Cruz is not an outside receiver. He never was an outside receiver. He was playing out of position. And, you know, with Sterling in the slot and him being the future slot receiver, you know, Victor's job was, hey, look, you're what we got on the outside. But when you add, you know, when you add Brandon Marshall to that outside spot and he comes in and the first thing he says is, I know I'm not here to be a number one. All that talk about, oh, it's going to be an issue. Oh, you know, is Brandon Marshall capable of accepting that? That goes out the window. And just speaking when it comes onto the field, you know, that's a major upgrade in my opinion. Brandon Marshall had a down year last year. He had a down year and he was playing with, in my opinion, the worst quarterback in the league last year. Or one of, and he still had a pretty decent season. He had 788 yards on 59 receptions. He only had 3 touchdowns, but he was also hurt. If you remember that Buffalo game, he went down so awkwardly, I thought his knee is out. I was like, oh, this is the last time we're going to see Brandon Marshall on the football field. Do you remember that Thursday night game last year? He went down so awkwardly, I was like, he's done. He was hurt after that. And now that, you know, he's here, 6'4", he's a monster. And that's a big upgrade from Victor Cruz. And it's not a knock on Victor Cruz, but Victor Cruz is not an outside receiver.
Weiss, think about this. Think about this for a second. 2015, behind arguably a way worse offensive line, still the Ben McAdoo offense. Eli Manning made Reuben Randall, on paper, look like a legitimate outside receiver.
Yeah.
Reuben Randall is now Brandon freaking Marshall.
Yeah.
That's Reuben absurd.
Reuben Randall had 8 touchdowns in 2015. He had, I believe, close to 800 yards.
When Eli Manning gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, it's not going to be 2-time Super Bowl winner. It's not going to be 2-time Super Bowl MVP. It's going to be made Reuben Randall look decent. That's going to be the first thing on his plaque.
Can I say one thing, though, about
Reuben? Yes.
I mean, this is how out of position Victor Cruz was last year. Reuben Randall looked like a better number 2 wide receiver than Victor Cruz.
Yeah.
No, I'm not even lying.
That's not a lie.
I mean, that, to me, if you guys go back and watch Reuben Randall in 2015 and 2014 versus Victor Cruz last year, and you tell me who looks more comfortable. It's tough watching Reuben Randall. I know that, but the numbers don't lie. Reuben looked more comfortable on the outside and looked like a better outside receiver than Victor Cruz at this stage of Victor's career.
No, you're not going to find me disagreeing.
And you bring in Brandon Marshall?
Yeah.
It's like trading
in a Toyota for a Jaguar X.
Yeah. Jaguar X might have some miles on him, but it's still a Jaguar.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on to the offensive line. I mentioned it before. I am comfortable enough with the offensive line. I'll say that. I do not have a lot of faith in DJ Fluker. Do not have a lot of faith in Eric Flowers. Do not have a lot of faith in Bobby Hart. I have very little faith in John Jerry. Obviously, Pugh and Richburg are the two studs on that line. But I'm not worried. Because I still believe that the main problem of the offense last year was the lack of a tight end presence and the fact that defenses could just stick 2 safeties up there and pretty much just put the Giants offense in neutral. You got Red Ellison, you got Evan Engram, you diversify the personnel sets, you diversify the route tree. It's a quick offense. People forget that. The West Coast offense is supposed to be nice and quick. Ball's going to come out of Eli's hands quick as long as Eric Flowers can be mediocre. Just be mediocre, man. The offensive line will be fine. And people worry about the running game. You take that offensive line, you pair it with Rashad Jennings. Disgusting, obviously. Paul Perkins, pretty much guaranteed first and second down reps, can pass block. We saw that last season. He's going to be responsible for that this year. I'm excited. I don't think that they're going to be great. Eric Flowers is still not hashtag not my left tackle. But at the end of the day, we have to live with it, and I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think when the offensive line, it's blind hope. It's blind hope for me. You know, we talked about Eric Flowers earlier. It's a big season for him. It's probably the biggest of his career. He can either, you know, be possibly out of the league next year, or not next year, but the year after. He could be on his way to earn a big contract. That's all in Eric's control. The right side, listen, John Jerry is an average offensive guard. He's an average offensive guard. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. The right tackle spot, with Bobby Hart, it's just blind hope. I'm more nervous about the offensive line than you. Because I think that, you know, even though, you know, they got the tight end and they got a true outside receiver opposite Odell, I still think that there were times where even with the Will Tye and the Cruz on the field and the same personnel sets, I still felt like there were so many plays where the offensive line was a liability. And this year, looking at that schedule, you got Von Miller, you got Khalil Mack, you got Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, you got Tamba Ali and Justin Houston. I mean, those are game-changing pass rushers. Like, when we talk about game-changing pass rushers, that's what a game-changing pass rusher is. They change a game on one play. So having that on top of the fact with so much, you know, uncertainty on the offensive line of how certain guys will play, I'm a little nervous about that. But I still think the offense will be much better. than what it was last season. I think tight end, natural number two receiver, will help. But there's a, to me, there's something that's one thing I do lose sleep over is that offensive line.
And I don't blame you. I've been one of the biggest critics. But here's the thing, right? In my opinion, you can be upset at Reese for the offensive line in past years. Ereck Flowers, bad pick. Having Bobby Hart as your right tackle, not great. But I think we both agreed that going into this offseason, there was really only one or two offensive tackles in the free agent market that we'd be willing to splurge for. The only offensive lineman I liked in the first round was Forrest Lamp, which we disagreed on that.
Went in the second round.
Went in the second round, right? But the Giants opted for Evan Engram instead. And then, you know, they take Bisnawati. I like him. I don't think he's going to crack the starting lineup, but hey, it's competition. He could develop. There was really not much to do this offseason. I think you can fault Jerry Reese for not adjusting the offensive line in past years. But I mean, again, you look at what some of these guys like Russell Okung got. Okung allowed almost as many pressures as Flowers did last year, and he got like a, I don't even remember, it was 5-year, $35 million or something like that.
Something like that. But the big one was Khalil. I mean, that was
right. And Khalil was horrible, and he's injury prone. So
he was worse than Ereck Flowers.
Yeah, he was.
I think 5 years, $55 million.
Crazy.
From Carolina.
Yeah. So listen, fault him for the past this offseason, but it's, you know, it's rough. It's just not a great offseason for offensive line. So you got to live with it. I really do think, I mean, you mentioned all the great pass rushers, Von Miller, Joey Bosa, Justin Houston. We just have to hope that Rhett Ellison can assist whoever is assigned those pass rushers, and that Paul Perkins can step up and, you know, slow some guys down. That's, I mean, sort of blind hope, like you said.
It's all blind hope right now. And all you guys that say, oh, I believe that the offensive line can get better, it's just blind hope. You said the same thing last year.
Yeah.
The same thing the year before. They are who they are, and it's all blind hope right now.
They are who we thought they were.
By the way, you know, speaking of the Matt Khalil contract.
Yeah.
He got 5 years, $55 million with Carolina. You know who the GM was that gave him that contract?
Yeah. My boy, Dave Gettleman.
What do you mean your boy? I wasn't even going there.
I thought you were going there.
No, I wasn't going to talk about you. I was going to say there was a lot of people that told me that, you know, the Giants made the wrong decision. Looking at you, New York Post.
Yeah. All right. Okay, that was the offensive line. I think that was the last thing on the rundown. Anything else you want to bring up and talk about before we get to some questions?
No, sir.
All right. So why don't you go ahead? You pull up some questions. I have a few pull up in front of me. Matthew Frankel at MFrankel2. How do you feel playing the Cowboys on the road week one basically every year, especially with half their roster suspended? It's not like a bet. I mean, you're going to have to play them twice regardless. I just want some parity. Like, give me a different week one opponent. The Giants have played the Cowboys week one the last 3 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, they played them last year, the year before that. And 2014, they opened up Monday night against Detroit. 2013, they opened up in Dallas.
Okay.
2012, they opened up. It was the Super Bowl. It was a Wednesday game. They opened up against Dallas.
So it's been four of the last five.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then if you want to go even further back, I have to look it up. But not 2011. They were in Washington. 2010. They were, I believe, opening up the new stadium against Carolina.
Okay, so four of the last 5 years, Dallas. I just want to change it up. Like, it's pretty much like a yearly tradition. You can expect half of Dallas's roster to be suspended, or injured. So that's a given. That's irrelevant. And if their shitty fans want to be like, oh well, we didn't have half our roster. Okay, well maybe if you had competent management, you wouldn't be picking these guys who get suspended all the time. It's just annoying. I just want, you know, I want them to change it up. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, it kind of gets repetitive when you're playing the same team. Even if, okay, fine, you want us to play Dallas. It's a big rating boost. Why does it have to be in Dallas all the time in week one?
Give us a home game, for crying out loud.
Yeah, you know, but hey, I'm not complaining about that. Let me ask you a question, though.
Okay.
We're speaking of the Cowboys. Is Zeke playing week one?
Yes.
Is he playing because he's appealing the suspension, or is he playing because there is no suspension?
I don't think there's going to be a suspension.
Wow. Okay.
Not that it matters, in my opinion.
Nope. I got one for you.
Go.
T-Narco 34. Do you think adding Brandon Marshall will make it harder for Sterling Shepard to succeed?
No.
No.
I think it makes it easier.
I agree.
It just all it does is open up the middle of the field more for Shep. I mean, we said it before. I mean, there wasn't a guy on the roster who went more under the radar last year, I think, than Sterling Shepard, who had 800 yards, 8 touchdowns, and just adding that outside receiver, who I think, in my opinion, he's going to be a between the 20s guy. He's going to be that big body who can win one-on-one. If he finds his way open in the middle of the field, great. But I really do think people should expect a big year from Sterling Shepard. Maybe not a boost in touchdowns, but in terms of yardage, I think he'll end up closer to 1,000 than he does 800.
I'm with you all the way.
Perfect.
We talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Finally got a natural number two who will make people respect him, and then you open the middle of the field. The better question would have been, does adding Evan Engram make it harder for Shepard to succeed? That'll be a conversation.
Yes. And again, I think I'm going to stick to the same answer that I gave for Marshall. I think he'll be, at this point in time, I think maybe he'll be more of a red zone threat than he will be in terms of eating up Shepard's middle of the field yardage.
I'm with you.
Okay. Next one, Eric Willett, longtime listener from Ottawa. Hello up there. Love the show. Do you guys think that Odell will ever be named captain? Let's go, G-Men. Interesting question. I wouldn't rule it out. Maybe in 3 years, but you know, for the time being, no. And I think he still has some, I don't want to say growing up or maturing to do. But I wouldn't rule it out. I think, you know, he, at least on the field, he's a fiery guy. I think he'll learn to lead more by example in the coming years. And even though people said it was a distraction, I think he did it this offseason. You know, he was picking the brain of Hall of Fame receivers and working out with some of the best trainers. So I wouldn't rule it out, but it's probably going to be in the future if that's even a question.
It's tough because I saw this question earlier today, and shout out to Ottawa, Canada. But last year there was one offensive captain who was a receiver. Do you know who that you want to take a guess at who that
receiver in the entire was? NFL?
In the entire NFL. Ooh, one wide receiver.
Give me the division.
The NFC South.
NFC South.
Yeah.
Whew. And he was definitely, he was a wide receiver.
100%.
Was it Julio?
Nope. I'm sorry, there were two. The first one you can get. He's from the NFC West. Go ahead, it's not that hard.
NFC West?
Yeah, that's the first one.
I'm trying to, there aren't even.
Come on. He's got dreadlocks, one of the great receivers ever. He's playing a Super Bowl.
NFC West?
NFC West. Wide receiver.
All right, I give up.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, Fitz. Okay.
So he was a captain, and in the NFC South, it was Vincent Jackson, Tampa Bay.
That's gross.
Here's the thing, though. Those two teams had two offensive captains. There are about maybe 7-8 teams that have only one captain per unit. The Giants are one of them. No wide receivers were captains. My point is that rarely do receivers become captains, and I think as long as Eli Manning is here, don't see Odell being an offensive captain on the
right
team. Future, maybe, but it's just, I would have to go back and look at history. I think it's very rare for a receiver to be a captain, especially when the team only carries one captain per unit. So I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. But when you look at the history, it's against Odell being a captain anytime soon.
Yep. You have one? Or I got one more.
Go ahead. You got one.
Ollie Newton, do you think Landon Collins will outperform last season or be less impactful?
Stats-wise, I don't think he can match it.
He had a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, and he got a cut sacks too.
Yeah.
In terms of leadership, in terms of taking control of the defense, in terms of being a great safety, I think he will take there is another step there for Landon Collins. He's only 22 years old.
Yeah. Crazy young.
So there is definitely another step there for Landon Collins.
Yeah.
He just turned 23 this year, but there is another step there for Landon Collins, and whether he takes it this year will be interesting to see. But I don't think he'll be able to match the interceptions and the 5 interceptions and 4 sacks, but I think we will see another great season from Landon Collins.
Yeah, all right. You got any more questions?
I got a question for you.
Okay.
All right. Do you believe that the starting quarterback of the future for the Giants is on their roster?
Oh, wow.
I know I kind of threw it right at you, but it was something I was thinking about today.
I'm going to say no.
I'm with you.
I mean, I don't think it's that fair of a question because we literally haven't seen anything of Davis Webb.
Right.
I mean, we know what we're getting out of Geno and Josh, so I think it's very fair to say no. The only we got to see more Davis Webb. I don't think they would have drafted him unless they planned on giving him that opportunity in a few years. But again, you know, if the Giants want to spend like a mid-round pick on a quarterback like every year up until the year Eli retires, at least it gives them options. You know, you're not going to win in this league unless you have good quarterback play or at least competent quarterback play. And you might as well take as many shots until you hit one.
Who is the one player on the Giants defense that is irreplaceable?
Wow. I think we had this conversation a few weeks ago. The one player who is, or maybe I had it with Diz. It is, I would, on the defense, I'm deciding between Landon Collins and Damon Harrison.
I'm stuck on that too. I was kind of hoping you'd help me out.
I would say Damon Harrison.
Me too. Because there's just so much he brings to the table in terms of his, he scares people, man.
He can take on 2 defenders at once. He eats up the run, and having him on the middle just opens up more one-on-one opportunities for the defensive ends. So,
yeah, and he also hides the Giants' one weakness on their defense, which is their
linebackers. The linebackers, exactly.
Yep.
All right. Is that it? Is that all we got?
That's all we got.
All right, guys, you know the drill. Follow us, Twitter, at EthanGSN, at NYGDaily, at GothamSN. Subscribe. Share this episode with the hashtag PlayNYGWeekly to enter our fantasy league, and stay tuned for the giveaways. Thank you for tuning in. It's going to be a great season. We're ready. Yes. We're here to podcast every week, and we may have a special episode next week. I'm not going to say anything or promise anything until it's official, but stay tuned. It'll be interesting and exciting, to say the least.
Football is back.
Football's back, baby. We'll speak to you next week. Peace.
Peace.